The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Into ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray. I am joined by Ali Moreno and Stevie Nichol. And a little later in the show, we'll be hearing from Ali Krieger as the US women's national team embark on their Tokyo 2020 Olympic journey. But first, Memphis Depay, recharged and ready to represent the biggest club in the world, he said on Twitter. Here he is in his first training session with Barcelona. Sid Lowe is joining us now to talk a little bit more about his situation. Sid, let me get this straight. So he signed with the club, but he can't be registered. How does that work?
Well, I'll try, Kay, and make this as simple as possible. And then, of course, if you like, we can go through some of the details bit by bit. But let's start with the very basics. The basics are that Spanish football clubs, as imposed by La Liga, have a salary cap. That salary cap, of course, covers not just the salaries, but all the money spent on the first team squad. Now, the difference between those salary caps and, for example, some of the rules that are applied by UEFA for financial fair play is that those salary caps are not about punishing teams after the event. They're about imposing them in advance. In other words, a club like Barcelona will be set a limit. And that limit will be, this is the amount of budget you have for your first team squad, and you are not allowed to go over it. In other words, if you have a limit of around about 200 million euros, which it looks like Barcelona's limit will be, and you have already got 200 million euros worth of players in that budget in terms of what you're paying them in salaries, in terms of what repayments need to be made for player transfers and so on, you cannot add anyone to that squad. Barcelona are currently over budget. It's this simple. They're over budget. So those players cannot be added to the squad. Now, the good news for Barcelona is that there's about a month until the season starts. They have about a month to sort this out. And that means, of course, selling players, generating money, taking salary off their books, and being able to fit all of this into place. The bad news is that while they have a month, they have a huge amount of work to do to be able to get those players into the squad the way that they want and to be able to get those players registered.
So there's players that need to be offloaded, and one of the big names there, and especially in terms of salary, is Antoine Griezmann. We know this. Apparently there's been a latest turn, according to the Spanish press, that the pact he had with Atleti has broken down. So what's the latest situation there?
Well, look, in a way, that's quite simple, which is that Barcelona are now in a position, and forgive me for putting this in such blunt terms, where Barcelona basically have to listen to any offer for any players because they desperately need to generate that money and they desperately need to reduce the demands of their wage structure. Now, of course, one way of doing that in particular is to get rid of players who are on big wages, and that's the case of Antoine Griezmann. There's also over 70 million euros worth of amortizations that have to be put into their budget for next year with Griezmann. So getting rid of him would make a huge impact in terms of trying to balance the budget and trying to get all of those players registered in time. So that means that Barcelona are open to all sorts of scenarios and all sorts of propositions. One of those propositions came from Atletico Madrid, which was, well, how about we organise this, that we effectively have a swap deal between Saul and Antoine Griezmann, although the league doesn't like swap deals, so they would probably have been two different operations, and we try and work this out. The problem with that is very simple. You have two players. And you have two players who have different demands in terms of wages, in terms of what they expect to get paid, in terms of what kind of role they expect to the clubs, and in terms of whether or not they're going to accept this kind of deal. And so the two deals are effectively dependent upon each other. There's another problem here, which is Barcelona looked at this and thought, well, this is a way of reducing the wage demands on us by having someone else pay for Antoine Griezmann's wages. Atletico Madrid looked at this and thought, this is fantastic. This is a way of getting Griezmann virtually for free. And you know what? If we're really lucky, as was happened with Luis Suarez last year, we may well be able to be in a situation in which Barcelona even cover some of the wages of this player. Now, of course, what happened, very simply, is that all these pieces didn't fit together, and that deal is very difficult to do.
And so now the reports are stating that Barcelona, and some of them are saying they're demanding money for him as well, are shopping him around to Premier League clubs too. But we know that they are very high wages. Can you see him being the right fit at a Premier League club? And obviously we're talking only about a few who could afford him.
Well, the first thing is that all those clubs that you may be talking about, they also know with certainty that Barcelona are desperate. And so they are in a negotiating position where they come to the table knowing that Barcelona needs you to make this transaction. They need to make it happen. And because when you get desperate and you need something to happen, you become a little irresponsible with the transaction. And so you're willing to take certain losses. You're willing to make certain alleviation or certain concessions in the deal because, guess what? You need it to happen. That desperation that Barcelona has, any team that is interested in Antoine Griezmann would be smart to say, okay, Barcelona, we're not going to meet you halfway. You're going to come three quarters of the way over here, and then at that point we'll start talking. And when we start talking, we're going to be in the position of power. So we're going to do a deal that benefits us, not necessarily a deal that benefits you.
And then obviously you've got teams like Manchester City who are in the window for players like Harry Kane. If that's not to work, would Antoine Griezmann be a good fit there given the fact they want a goal scorer?
Well, as far as I can remember, Antoine Griezmann scores quite a lot of goals when he's given the opportunity. Antoine Griezmann will fit in any team across the planet. He's that good. He absolutely 100% would fit in at City. You know, City have been playing pretty much the whole of last season without a so-called centre-forward. He absolutely fits the bill as if you want a centre-forward or if you want somebody coming off. Perfect. Chelsea. He would fit in at Chelsea. Again, a team that doesn't or hasn't, certainly under Tuchel, played with what you would call a centre-forward, but they create lots of chances. Problem is, they don't have anybody to take them. Guess what? Antoine Griezmann would be perfect at Chelsea as well. So, listen, he could fit in anywhere, but those two in particular.
You know the only team that he doesn't fit in quite well? Barcelona.
Yeah.
And the reason is, Lionel Messi is still there and will be there. And so that free role that we've spoken about time and time again is simply not available. And so, therefore, I think it would be in the best interest, not only of Barcelona, but certainly of Antoine Griezmann, to say, you know, this is not what I thought I was getting myself into, and how about we find a way out? This may just be the way out that he requires.
So, Sid, if it's not Barcelona and it's not Atleti, is it most likely going to be a Premier League club then?
Well, look, both Steve and Ali have absolutely nailed this. This is the scenario we're in. Time is running out, options are limited, and clubs know that Barcelona are in trouble. And there's one thing worse than being in difficulty financially, and that's everybody knowing you're in difficulty financially, because your way out is sales. Your way out is clubs coming and paying money for your players. But those clubs, as Ali's rightly laid out, don't necessarily want to pay that money because they know that you need it. So they will wait until the last possible minute. As you say, so in which case, what is the scenario for Antoine Griezmann and for Barcelona? Well, the scenario is Premier League clubs, because they're the ones that have the money. They're the ones that could assimilate his wages. They're the ones that could find a place for him. And I'm completely with Stevie on this, by the way. I mean, I know that his time at Barcelona has been difficult, but Antoine Griezmann is a fantastic footballer. And I'm sure there will be clubs out there thinking, this is brilliant. We've got a club that desperately needs to sell, and they desperately need to sell a player who we think is brilliant, and we could well get him at a price that in time will prove to be a bargain.
Meanwhile, Messi's on holiday and living it up in Miami, and that's not going by quietly for him. What's the timeline on his situation? How does it differ with what we're seeing with Memphis Depay with this signing and registering? How does it differ?
Well, in truth, it doesn't really differ at all, because Barcelona's situation is that the league have the requirement for when the season starts to register the players within the salary limit. And so that cut-off point, which I must confess I'm not sure exactly the date, but it's just before the season starts, that cut-off point is the same for all of them. Now, look, obviously, look, Barcelona have a series of priorities, and they will look at their squad and say, well, if we're put in a position where we are told you can't register in terms of salary, say for argument's sake, and I am genuinely just inventing this figure, but say for argument's sake, La Liga says you can't register 20 million euros worth of players in terms of salaries. Barcelona will look at their salaries and think, okay, well, I'll lose this guy who makes 10 and these two guys who make 5, and that's 20 million's gone off the book, and then we'll worry about what the La Liga imposes on us. And they won't leave out Messi, and they won't leave out Memphis Depay. But of course, the reason why this is a blockage on Messi's deal being confirmed right now is because neither Messi nor Barcelona can afford to be in a position like that. And so they want to wait until they're absolutely sure that there are no major obstacles in their way still.
Well, there'll be more Messi chat and bonus content for you over on our YouTube channel. Make sure you look up ESPN FC, hit subscribe, and keep up to date with all the latest football talk. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. The US women's national team open up their journey at the Tokyo 2020 Olympics tomorrow. These are some more notable games. Great Britain taking on Chile, China against Brazil, Japan against Canada, and obviously Sweden against the US. The US are looking to take the gold medal and become the first reigning Women's World Cup champions to take Olympic gold. And we are now delighted to be joined by two-time World Cup winner Ali Krieger, and she will be with us throughout the Olympics here on ESPN. Ali, it's great to have you. How are you doing?
I'm great, Kay. Thank you so much for having me. This is such an exciting time.
Oh, we're so happy to have you. Let's get started then, because you know what it's like to obviously be part of a World Cup team and also part of an Olympics team. How do the two differ?
I mean, World Cup championship is the pinnacle of our sport, and it's the biggest football tournament in the world. And so that in itself is what you dream of playing in at our level. So I don't know if that can really be touched, but then also you have, you know, the one percenters who make these Olympic Games and get to win another gold medal. So each are a fantastic in themselves, but obviously I love playing in a World Cup. And the Olympics is just such a different atmosphere. You're part of a bigger team in Team USA. So it's quite different, but same mentality.
How do you think the US are going to do then in the current situation? Because it's a bit different to what we're used to, obviously, with COVID, and there's the concerns, no fans there this time. How do you think it will be? And have any of the women expressed any concerns to you regarding this?
Yes, of course. I mean, we've all had that, doubt of having the Olympic Games again, even when last year when COVID just began. So I know that some of the players are a bit stressed, but, you know, we trust in the doctors, we trust in the medical staff and the medical team of the United States, and also in Tokyo. And, you know, that is putting trust in them, that they're doing the best job that they can to keep all the players and staff and team safe. So one, that makes me feel better that they're doing everything they can to stay safe. And then as individuals, you have to really understand the risk and know that, you know, you need to stay isolated, unfortunately, and within your team, and just focus on, you know, each and every game, each and every training. And that should keep the team's, you know, spirits higher, that they have each other, they can support each other through this tough time. But ultimately, they're focused now, they're there, they're in the tournament, they're in their bubble, and they're not really worried about any of the outside factors. Yes, there's always that COVID doubt kind of creeping in. But we've lived with that now for a year and a half. And if they're taking all the right precautions, then I think it's going to be safe. And they're going to do really well. Yes, it's going to be tough without the motivation of the fans and supporters in the crowd, but we thrive under that pressure always. And we understand that it's about the team, and you just have to roll your sleeves up. You have to show up, and you got to play your best.
So let's talk a little bit about that pressure, because never before have a women's team gone as World Cup, reigning World Cup champions into an Olympics and won the Olympics. So obviously that's the aim for the US this time around. What makes you think it could be different this time around?
Watching the games this past 6 months of the women's national team, we have one of the best, if not the best, attacking games that I've seen and played with in my career. So this is such an exciting group of women who are so powerful in the attack. We have even Crystal coming out of the back, and even Kelly O'Hara on that right side. Getting into the attack as often as possible has been really exciting to see. I know that even the game changers coming into the game are such a threat. So this is going to be an excellent tournament. I'm sure we're going to see a lot of fantastic goals, but we are so strong. And I know that this attacking mentality that we have will show up tomorrow. And yes, Sweden will be a tough opening game for us. But, you know, if you want to win and you want to be the best, you have to start off these games with the best teams.
Who do you think those main challenges will be then? Because you mentioned Sweden, and obviously there is a score to settle after 2016. And I've even seen that Alex Morgan said that for those players who weren't there in 2016, they'll be reminding them what happened.
Absolutely. It was such a tough game for us, you know, losing that match and not moving on to the semifinals. But, you know, I think that Sweden is going to cause some problems for us, as we saw this past year playing against them and tying 2-2. I think also Canada showed in the She Believes Cup that they can step up to the plate. I mean, we have a target on our back. So as the United States steps into this tournament, we obviously always know that every team wants to go there to beat us. And Brazil has been looking great with a lot of their younger players stepping into these big roles that they need to be impact players. And so they've, you know, taken it upon themselves to really produce some really beautiful football in the past 6 months when I've been watching. But yeah, those three teams, I think, are obviously going to pose a challenge. You have Team GB, who's always battling with the United States and wanting to beat us. And then obviously Netherlands, and that's going to be another tough game along with the host country. So there's a handful of teams that are really capable of causing some issues and challenges for the United States. But ultimately, we are such a big threat and you know, gonna have a huge impact on this tournament.
So let's talk about the US then. Obviously, Tobin Heath's back, and that's great news. Alex Morgan says that she feels stronger than ever after her pregnancy. But there are some lesser-known names as well on the squad. Who's going to have a standout tournament? Who are some names we should be looking out for?
I obviously think everyone is so excited to see Crystal Dunn play. She's such an exciting player to watch. She brings her individual magic, and she gets the job done. And she's just been so consistent since she's been in this starting lineup for the past few years. And it's exciting to see, because I've seen her when she just came into the squad, and now she's starting every single game and playing out of her mind. So that's one player who I'm really excited to see. Then you have, of course, our central midfield, where you have Sam and Lindsay and Rose, and even Christy Mewis stepping in and playing. Kristen Press has had such an amazing year, actually 2 years, even ever since the World Cup. She's been outstanding, finishing everything she can get her foot on into the box. And so those are a few players that I'm really excited to see. And then solidifying in the back line, we have such consistency in the back, you know, with Becky and Abby, solidifying that back line and making sure that, you know, they keep things safe and connected.
We can't wait to watch and for things to get underway. And we can't wait to hear more from you, Ali, as you'll be looking on that game or back on that game tomorrow when you join us on ESPN FC. Ali Krieger with us throughout the Olympics. And don't forget, for more on US soccer, never miss Football Americas. It drops twice a week with Sebastian Salazar and Hercules Gomez. It brings you everything you need to know about US soccer with the men's and the women's teams. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Spain have named six players from the Euros to their roster for the Olympics. Unai Simón, Eric Garcia, Pau Torres, Pedri, Mikel Oyarzabal and Dani Olmo. But is there a fear that there could be exhaustion setting in with these players obviously having played in a major tournament and then coming into this Olympics? Sid Lowe, what's the feeling back home about this, back in Spain?
Well, look, let's focus it all on one player, because so much of the debate has been focused on one player, but in a way that he serves as an example for all of them, and that's Pedri. So Pedri has played, I think it's 70 games over the last season. At the end of the Euros, of course, when he played every minute bar one in the Euros, and nobody expected that. This is an 18-year-old kid. In theory, I suppose, at 18, you've got energy to burn. But when the announcement was made that he was going to the Olympic Games as well, there was real concern from Barcelona. There was an attempt to block this. There was an attempt to discuss with the federation about whether they could somehow control the number of minutes that Pedri played at the very least. Now, obviously, they would have preferred him not to play any minutes at all. And this is definitely a live issue, and it's definitely one that clubs are concerned about. And so much so, for example, that if you listen to what Luis de la Fuente said, and Luis de la Fuente is the Spanish under-21 coach, and he's the coach of this Olympic side, he said this was the hardest team that he'd ever had to put together, basically because he encountered a whole load of clubs saying, no, you're not taking our player. Now, there's one very important point here. Spanish clubs are not allowed to refuse. Foreign clubs are. So you had foreign clubs saying, no, we're not letting this happen, but Spanish clubs weren't allowed to. I think I'm right in saying that the only foreign-based player that was allowed to go was Dani Olmo, who, of course, plays with Leipzig. The rest of them are Spanish-based players. Barcelona didn't want this to happen, but in truth, Barcelona couldn't stop it because that's the rules. The federation takes precedence.
Well, that's a tricky situation then, isn't it, Stevie? So what are you looking at doing? Rotating those players to ensure that, you know, injuries don't set in?
The players shouldn't be told to go anywhere. And particularly after a major championship as well. I'm actually surprised that the Players' Federation don't get involved in this. Because it seems to me that the only people that don't have a say in anything seem to be the players. I mean, these guys, particularly Pedri, he's not going to turn around and say, look, I'm tired, I need a break, I don't want to go. He's not going to do that. But that's not good for him. Somebody has to look after him and the other players, and that has to come down to the players' union. The players' union has to get stronger all around the world. Because whether it's Olympics or any other competition, players are getting run into the ground and they can, right now it seems, do nothing about it. So if the Federation, the Spanish Federation, could start that off by doing the players a favour and looking after them, but clearly they don't want to look after their players either. So somebody's got to step in and take care of the players.
Especially with Pedri, as Sid was saying, he's just a teenager, but he is seen as the key to the long-term future at Barcelona. So how are Barcelona going to be feeling about this, Ale?
Well, not great. And I suppose that for the Spanish Olympic team, it really puts some pressure on the performance in that it really becomes gold or bust. Win the competition or else none of this is worthwhile. And even if you win the competition, Pedri shows up with Barcelona and early on in the season, he has an injury. People are going to point at the Olympic team, the gold medal, if you will, the sort of hopes and dreams of a nation of having that gold medal and winning that for Spain and what that means for the country and the Olympic competition and the ideals of the Olympic competition. All of those things are going to be discussed and then they're going to be thrown out the window because Pedri is not available for Barcelona. Barcelona does not care about the Olympic Games and how well the Spanish national team does. Yeah, of course, if they win it, everybody's going to say, see, our guy Pedri led this team to win it. If they don't win it, or if Pedri gets injured, now it becomes a reason as to why players like Pedri should be protected. To Stevie's point, yes, you want the protection of the players, but worst of all, the players are in the middle of this. They're getting pulled in one direction saying, hey, come and represent your country, gold medal, Olympic Games. How can you say no to this? And then on the other hand, you have your club team telling you, hey, Pedri, don't you need to rest? Huh? Hey. Do you really need this additional minutes in your body? Don't you want to be at your very best when you started the season with us? In the middle of this is an 19-year-old kid saying, I want to do everything. And I want to do my best in everything. But physically, you can't do it.
Do you think, Sid, that it does put that pressure on them then, Spain, and that they do have to win, given the fact they have taken these players?
Yeah, absolutely. And Luis La Fuente has said quite publicly that I'm aware that we're favourites. I'm aware that with the squad that we've got, and by the way, if you look at the Spain team, it's incredibly strong for an Olympic national team. That said, it was very strong in the London Olympics, and they went with Juan Mata and David De Gea, and I can't remember three or four other very big names, and they didn't do very well at all. And I think it's very interesting both what both Steve and Ali are saying, and I'm really pleased in a way that we've got a player's perspective on this, because this is the difficulty, isn't it? As Steve says, we shouldn't have people telling players what to do. I suppose the flip side of that is, should we have people telling players what not to do? And I wonder what Pedri really wants to do deep down. And it must be difficult because you're being pulled one way and you're being pulled the other. And I suppose from Pedri's point of view, the possibility of playing at the Olympics and right now just wanting to play as much football as you can and that option of maybe having a gold medal, that's really, really attractive. And I suspect that deep down Pedri is probably thinking, well, you know what? If I play the Olympics and I get a gold medal, and that means I have to wait a month before I start my season with Barcelona, or 6 weeks before I start my season with Barcelona, then so be it. But a player is not in a position where he can say this publicly. He's not in a position where he can make this argument for himself. And I think that's very, very difficult. And I think those structures need to be in place, if nothing else, to give the players the framework through which they can either make their excuses or make their cases. And it's very, very difficult. But yeah, look, looking at the Spain team, they are in a position where they're under a huge amount of pressure to go and win the gold medal.
Yeah, not least for such a young team as well. Listen, if you ever miss an episode, don't worry. You can always download the show in podcast form. ESPN FC, available on a podcast wherever you do get yours.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Would you look at this, a free agent frenzy. So many players at big clubs and big names find themselves in the final year of their contract, and the list speaks for itself as you just go through it. But look at that frightening forward line. You can list every single player on that, and we could be in for quite a bumper transfer window next summer. Sid, is this a byproduct of the pandemic and what COVID's done? It's affected everybody, but not least the football world.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. Obviously, it's not the only explanation, but it's a very big part of it. And of course, this is based on the economics. It's based on the fact that there are lots of very, very good players who, in some cases, are stuck by the fact that their salaries are bigger than the market can currently assimilate. In some cases, that's because those salaries just are too big. In others, it's because those players have got older. In others, it's because those players have become less attractive. But all of those things come together to mean that there are players on the kind of salaries that other clubs don't want to pay, so there isn't an obvious place for them to go. There are all sorts of other reasons for this as well, though. You have players that are very, very well aware of their potential market and would rather that all of the potential money from a transfer goes to them rather than to their club. And so therefore they hold on. And why do they hold on? Because they are confident that by next summer or even before that they will be in a position to be able to choose their destination. And so players like Mbappe, players like Haaland believe, well, I can wait. And I can wait, for example, exactly the right clubs to emerge. What that does, of course, is it alters the way that those clubs behave. The desperation to get players onto new deals, the willingness of clubs elsewhere to think, well, I'll wait a year. I don't need to get this player now. I don't need to spend this money now because in a year's time I can get him cheaper. And all of these things come together. And I suppose like any marketplace, a lot of it is based on the confidence of the actors within that marketplace, whether that's the selling club, the buying club, or in particular the player themselves.
Ali, what about the clubs that do have the money right now? Should they try and take advantage of this situation?
Yes. But you have to have a plan in place regardless. You cannot fall in love with the list of players and say, well, I'm going to, in some ways, redirect my plans, whatever is it that I wanted to do with my club, because of these names that are available to you. Don't fall into that trap. Don't fall into the trap of thinking, I'm the club and I'm the coach that is going to turn Isco's career around. Don't do that, okay? And don't believe that you're the guy who somehow is going to get the very best of Gareth Bale in his last couple of years as a professional. Mm-mm. Don't fall into that trap. You have to be very aware as to what is it that your club identity and policy is. And then if those players that are available to you match what you want to do with that identity and what you want to do with your transfer policy, then it becomes a match made in heaven. Until then, I don't think you force the market or you force the bar simply because this guy all of a sudden became readily available. There are reasons as to why some of these players aren't available. Isco is available because he hasn't been playing all that great. There are names that in that list that are available to you because they have not been good over the last couple of seasons.
Oh, what a summer transfer window we could be in for next year, though, Stevie, with all those names in the mix.
Well, as quiet as it's been recently, it could be exactly what you said. There could be an explosion. And at the end of the day, we've pulled out the biggest names on that list. But by this time next year, there could be double that, as far as great players are concerned. So it's kind of a toss of a coin which side you're on, because from a player's point of view, it seems to be ideal because they're in charge, they can pick and choose. But it's also a lot of the clubs, particularly the ones with money, they're also in a fantastic place because they can pick and choose. Because is the competition going to be there next year? Yes, everybody around the world seems to be getting back to some sort of normality, but we're still a long way off it. And the majority of clubs, even this time next year, are not going to have as much money as they probably normally would. So it's going to be the chosen few that have money now and will accumulate between now and then. And the rest, I'm afraid, are going to get left behind.
You talk about the clubs, those that do have money. And what about those who could capitalise, Sid? Because you're looking at this situation, why wouldn't the likes of PSG and Borussia Dortmund try and make some money now on Erling Haaland and Kylian Mbappe instead of letting them go for free next summer? Or in Mbappe's and Haaland's case, obviously, there's the release clause, but a lot less than it could be.
Yeah, and of course, we come back to what we were saying earlier about confidence, and it's about whether you're prepared to take that risk, how far you're prepared to push this, whether you think that, listen, by next summer we might have found a solution to this, or do we take this now? And this is, you know, this has always been the case in football, but I think with the pandemic is even more the case because there are a lot of clubs without the money. That, of course, you go into that final year of a player's contract and you know that you're 12 months away from that player leaving for free, so you think, do we accept a lower fee now because at least we're getting something? At least we're getting some sort of solution. Do we try and force that player's hand? But then does that player want to? Is that player confident that, let's say for argument's sake, you've got a great player and the only team that comes in for him, for argument's sake, is Manchester City. And that player doesn't necessarily want to go to City, but, well, City's pretty attractive and you really push him because you're thinking, well, I want this 50 million now that I'm not going to get next summer. Does that player say, actually, you know what, I'm going to wait for Manchester United to come or Real Madrid to come or Barcelona to come or whoever it may be? And I think that's where this is the situation we're in, and it's a situation that is applicable to all kinds of markets. It's about confidence. It's about the belief that the deal will appear. It's about the belief that the money will appear. And you know, you look at it in terms of players' wages, for example. Let's take Gareth Bale as an example. The amount of money that he's on at Real Madrid, he will not get anywhere else. But how long is he prepared to wait to see if he gets close to that? How low is he prepared to go before he moves on? How much does he want that money and hang on for a year at Real Madrid rather than maybe take less somewhere else? And this is the kind of balancing act that clubs and players and agents all over Europe are now faced with. And as you say, those clubs with money and those clubs with the financial muscle to be able to do this are looking at this now and thinking, you know what, if we move now, We get that player now, and we don't have to go through the auction next year because we go into a market now where we have an advantage that perhaps in 12 months' time we no longer have.
Yeah, it's like a gamble for the clubs, the players and their agents. You can hear more from these three in Extra Time. You can catch Extra Time daily over on YouTube. Upcoming MLS games on tap for you. One to look out for is Inter Miami, who are struggling very much against the New England Revolution, who are not struggling at all right now. 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus. These games across Tuesday and Wednesday. And it is Austin FC against the Seattle Sounders here on Thursday, 9:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. And also Orlando City taking on Philadelphia Union.
Hey, just so, not also. I'm calling that game, Kay. Get excited.
Well, we know what we're watching at 7:30 Eastern, don't we? Orlando City against Philadelphia Union. But all the talk right now in MLS is at Atlanta United. Joseph Martinez has said, I have this year, then I have two more years. The first time I came here, I said, this is my club, this is my city, and I love it here. I want to retire here. I love this club. Cool. Why has he been asked about this? Why is he talking about this? Well, we know it's because Gabriel Heinze has just been fired, and there's been all sorts of talk about what went down there and why he has been shown the door, Ali.
Yes, and it is to be expected that Jose Martinez would come out and say, I love this club, I love it here, because Gabriel Heinze, one of the reasons as to what he was fired, in my estimation, was the fact that he took on Jose Martinez, a legend of the club, beloved in the city, and he was comfortably sitting in the doghouse of Gabriel Heinze for one reason or another. Those details we do not know. What we do know and what has been reported is that Gabriel Heinze, there's old school and then there is grossly archaic medieval school. And that's exactly what Heinze was doing with Atlanta. There are reports that this guy was denying the water supply to the players or the amount of water that they would drink in preseason. There's reports that he was ignoring the days off that have been agreed upon and the collective bargaining agreement. Those things are contractually obligated for coaches and staff to give the players a certain amount of days off. Whether you like it or not, that's the reality of this league, and that's what you have to abide for because these are contracts in place. But most of all, he took on the superstar, the face of the franchise. The guy that you look upon to score the goals, to be the productive player in the final third, your MVP candidate, anything and everything that you'd think of Atlanta United, you think Joseph Martinez. And that all of it would be handled, I suppose, with silk gloves and kind of swept under the rug if the team were winning. But the team is not winning. The team has been struggling. It has been a difficult season. Only two wins so far this year, and we're a third of the way in. And yet he continued to go down this path. It was not sustainable. Something had to break. Something had to give. And in the end, Gabriel Heinze, he gone.
Yeah, and understandable that Joseph Martinez is quite happy there. Won that battle for sure, Stevie.
Well, it was always going to be down to results. You know, if you're leaving your star man off the team and you're winning, then everybody upstairs thinks this is the right thing to do. And what you're doing is trying to get unity, trying to make sure that the superstar doesn't get too big for his boots. It's all great when you're winning. Unfortunately, when you're losing, it goes the other way. And that's pretty much what's happened to Heinze.
It's weird with Atlanta United, though. You feel as though they're just not able to find that winning formula and what they had with Tata Martino, and they keep seeking to try and find somebody that can do what he did, and it just continues to be a lost cause for them.
Right. And so you have a couple of things happening here. It's not only the fact that Tata Martino has walked out that door and his experience and his success and the way that he was able to build a team and the influence that he had over players, but also the players that have gone out the door and the players that have come in, the checks and balances is not quite working out. The credits and debits not quite working out, because those guys that have walked out the door, say a guy like Miguel Almirón, that was supposed to be, once he walked out the door, there were supposed to be options that were going to take the place of Miguel Almirón, say Pete Martinez, for example, that didn't work out. And you look at some of the decisions that they've made in the front office in terms of player personnel, And right now you have a team on the field that even with Jose Martinez will have difficulties winning games. And that in itself is part of the issue with Gabriel Lainez, is that, okay, you're not getting wins. You're not getting results. There is no consistency to the way you're playing. These new players that you're trying to fit into this team, not working out either. And then there is no confidence in this coach, because if you're a fan, you don't know this guy, right? You don't know Gabriel Lainez. You know Jose Martinez. You know what he has done for you. So when it comes to the perception and the battle of public opinion, who are the fans in Atlanta going to back? Who are they going to support? Well, Jose Martinez, we know he's going to score goals. This Gabriel Lainez, whatever we've seen from him in 13, 14 games, we don't like it. Gone. See you later.
In a front office, you need experience. It's one thing to have a new club and new faces, new ideas, but you need experience. And by experience, I mean somebody who is known in the football world and knows everybody. Because when you do your due diligence, you have to find out the methods of the coach that you're bringing in. You know, today, in today's game, everybody that sits down for an interview has a big fancy bullet point way of selling how they are and what their ideas are. And all executives that don't know anything about football love it. It's right down their alley. And then they bring the guy in and then they find out, hold on a second, this is what he does. That's why you need experience. Every front office needs experience to dig and find out what's in the grapevine, going around the football world. Because Gabriel Lainez hasn't all of a sudden come there and started doing this. He's been doing this his whole career. That's down at the front office to find that stuff out.
Yeah, and regardless how beautiful the PowerPoint presentation is and how convincing it is and how beautiful this guy can talk in an interview, the moment he starts denying water to the players, then at that point you're going, wait a minute, this was not, what slide was this in the PowerPoint presentation? This way it's not going to work out. Not now and not ever. This is a ridiculous way to go about coaching.
And I definitely like to stay around here at ESPN FC, so I'm going to let these guys go off and get a water break. What we are going to say is goodbye to you, and thank you so much for joining us for the latest show. Tune in tomorrow. Don Hutchison is going to be back. He's been off on vacation, I think.
I need hydrated. I can't wait. I need to do it now.
You okay?
Yeah, I need hydrated.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kay, Ale and Stevie. And Sid Lowe is at home in London. And I asked him what he had for dinner.
Yes.
And he said it wasn't chocolate tonight, which suggests that all he had last night for dinner was chocolate bars. Sid?
Well, look, it wasn't so much that all I had was chocolate bars, was that at one point, and this is a fabulous mum thing to do, I said to my mum, who, by the way, because of COVID, I've not seen for almost 2 years, have you got any chocolate? And she did that brilliant mum thing of saying, yeah, I might have. And she produced this enormous cardboard box with about hundreds and hundreds of chocolate bars in it, of all different types. And at this stage, I feel like I should make this point very clearly. There is no chocolate in the world to match Dairy Milk. And hundreds of chocolate bars, there were crunches in there, there were Lion bars, Dairy Milk, Kit Kats, even those funny mints, you know, those long thin finger things. And it was just magnificent. And I just thought it was a brilliant performance from my mother. And so today I was tempted to just not eat anything, just spend the entire day eating chocolate bars. But I would like to make very clear that I avoided that temptation and didn't do so.
Well, you could just send them our way, right?
I know, I really could do that. Funny enough, when I was at university, a friend of mine, a friend of my brother's, her dad worked in the biscuit factory of a very famous, in Britain at least, a very famous chocolate-covered biscuit known as a club, and I'm sure Stevie would have eaten many club biscuits in his
like
time.
If you like a lot of chocolate on your biscuit,
join our club. Join our club. Exactly. And basically, all the cast-offs from the factory would turn up sort of every couple of weeks in my university hall of residence in just a great massive cardboard box full of club biscuits that for whatever reason didn't make the cut. Now, they weren't good enough to go for the shops, but they were sure as hell good enough for me to eat them.
Oh, I mean, this is like this for Ali Moreno right now. It's just going over his head.
It's going over my head. However, when you hear Stevie salivate the way that he is right now, making the noises that he's making, you say, well, this must be special.
Do you know what I used to do? When I was at school, my mum used to buy clubs. So what I used to do was, I used to go into the class and I'd sit and I'd unwrap the whole thing, take the cover off, undo all the silver paper, eat the biscuit, and then I'd put it back together carefully with silver paper, put the top on, and then leave it in the desk 100%. For somebody in the next class to walk in and go, yeah, somebody's left a chocolate biscuit, and there'd be nothing inside it.
We'll get to your questions.
Stevie's so right, because the little silver paper on the inside was so perfectly folded, wasn't it? It was so square that you could put it back together and it looked like the chocolate bar was still inside. It was just such a perfect square. There's another university one which I probably shouldn't admit to, but here we go as we're on extra time and let's hope that no one's listening to us. In the vending machine in the Hall of Residence where I lived for my first year of university, they sold Twixes, which are not my favourite chocolate bar, but you know, they're a chocolate bar and I'm certainly not going to say no to them. And for some reason, this vending machine had a flaw. And those Twixes were selling for 2p, even though it officially said they were like 50p or whatever they were. And every morning they would refill the vending machine at 8 o'clock. And every morning at 7:59, I'd be standing outside with a pocket full of 2p coins, waiting for them to fill this thing up. And as soon as it was filled, I'm like, boom, 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 20 Twix bars, thanks very much. They must have wondered why every night the only chocolate bar that was sold out daily by 8:01 was the Twix.
The Sidlow Twix definitely fits. Right, we've got to get to your questions. LA, why Copper America matches are so physical? As a neutral, it was very hard to watch the final. The players were more on the ground than playing the ball.
It's a fair assessment, but it all has to do with the fact that these are rivalries that there's an emotional component to it. And there's a physicality that goes with it as well. And that has been part of those games historically. The other thing that doesn't help is that the field conditions were not great in Brazil throughout the tournament, certainly were not in the final either. And so if the field doesn't allow you to play, if you don't actually have the players on the field, when you think about this version of Argentina, it wasn't a bunch of playmakers. Those guys through the midfield were there for a reason. That was to maul Neymar, and they did that very well. And to their credit, that's the way that they wanted to play, and that's how they were going to win, and that's how they won. So I take nothing away from Argentina. But you look at the makeups of the teams, and Argentina in particular, it matched the way that the field forced you to play, and that is, let's make it physical, let's compete for 50-50s, let's win those challenges, let's frustrate Brazil. That's how we're going to win, and that's how they won.
And let's get Messi his trophy, and it happened. Alejandro, Sid, I'll come to you. What can you tell us about Brian Hill, who Tottenham are close to signing for $25 million plus Eric Lamela? Is this a smart transfer for Spurs?
I must admit, I think the fee is very high. But he's very, very exciting. He's very, very talented. He is a player, it's true. He's a player that's erratic. He's a player that there is a possibility that this doesn't work out as well as you would like. But he's very talented. He's very enjoyable to watch. He's kind of an old-fashioned winger. He's a guy that will go outside, that will dribble people. And I say dribble because I really do mean he will dribble around people. He's not a winger that knocks it past you and runs beyond you. He's not a winger that comes inside and runs beyond you. He's a winger that will go round defenders, rather than beyond them. And then quite often, he's one of those old-fashioned wingers in a way that he'll go round the defender and stop and wait and say, do you want to have another go then? And wait for the defender to go back to him and do it again. And so he's very, very fun to watch. I think he's young enough that there's rightly a belief that he can develop even further. And so in that sense, this could, in a year's time, feel like an absolutely inspired signing. Although that said, I must admit, I do think it's quite a lot of money for a young player that there are one or two doubts about. But if he gets it right, he's going to be, at the very least, he's going to be a lot of fun.
Especially with the nice hair as well, Brian Hill. You see him going to the Premier League? Yeah.
Is that the nice hair?
It was a nice fluffy hair, wasn't it?
It's a nice hair. I can relate to that, the nice hair. I think whoever he ends up with has to find that balance in between not taking the magic away from his game, but adding a little bit of simplicity. in that those moments in which he gets around a defender, he doesn't come back to get around the defender again. That getting around that initial defender and then putting the ball into a dangerous area, he's done his job. And there's value to that. So don't take away the magic, add simplicity, and that may just make him a better player long term.
Sid, another one for you. Can Coutinho be considered the worst signing for Barcelona? Not only that he's a flop, but also that he came from the bench, scored two, and assisted one to make it 8-2 against Bayern.
Yeah, I mean, that must really stick in the throat for Barcelona fans. An apology for the fact that I'm laughing just thinking about it. But yeah, imagine that. You've got this guy who helps your opponents to inflict upon you one of the worst defeats in your history. I think what that does do, by the way, is his role in that Bayern Munich team, while it wasn't as a starter, but it was still, you know, an important role in a team that won the European Cup. I think it tells you something that says that this isn't just because he's a bad player. It absolutely isn't because he's a bad player that things haven't gone well at Barcelona. It's about the context, about the team he's in, it's about the difficulties, it's about the pressure, it's about all of those kind of things. This is still a very, very talented footballer, but there's no doubt that it's a talented footballer for whom they spent too much money, for whom they didn't have a natural place in the team, for whom he didn't necessarily always settle. And I, by the way, am a believer in the fact that the first 5 months of Barcelona are actually very good, and I think we've forgotten them really, really quickly with Coutinho. But it hasn't worked, and I think the best solution for everyone is that he finds a club where he's comfortable and where he feels important and where he's able to play the kind of role that I think those of us who've seen him outside of Barcelona still believe that he can play.
Stevie, Liverpool could have never expected this to happen with Coutinho, surely?
I don't think anybody did. The way he played in his last two seasons at Liverpool, nobody thought that this was going to be a bust. Everybody thought that he was going to either keep them where they were or make them better. Just sometimes it's the wrong fit. And that's what's happened to him. He is a great player. He's shown that he's a great player. But you've got to put a player in a position where he's going to succeed. And that just never happened at Barcelona.
Next up, fashion. After Jan's questionable wardrobe choice on yesterday's show, it got me wondering, which former teammate of Ale and Stevie had the worst fashion sense? And before I ask you that, just to say, Craig Burley said that even you wouldn't wear this, Stevie.
I would wear that.
Oh, yeah.
I'd wear it to bed.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there's a pair of pants that go with that. That make pajamas.
Is that velour? Is that what that is?
I think it looks like it, doesn't it?
I think it is velour.
Very comfortable.
Flannel or velour. It looks
no,
like
it's not flannel. That's velour.
That's velour.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That is velour. Go Ali.
It's moss. It's moss. It's not moss. Velour. Yeah. It's made of moss.
It's definitely one of those that if you caress it gently, it certainly changes to a darker sort of shade, right? That's what we're talking about here. Yes.
I'd be interested what the colour is on it. You know, when you see the colours on the tag, what colour this would be classed as? Answers on a postcard, please. Ale, worst fashion sense among your former teammates?
I had a teammate. Who knows what he's doing these days, with Chivas USA, Nick LaBroca, who was my roommate at one point. And it wasn't so much the fashion sense as much as it was, he looked like the Charlie Brown character that looks like every like dirt is around him, or like it has this cloud of dust all over him, and nothing ever really matched, but and things just were just disheveled. It was just like the clothes hadn't been ironed, the pants, shirt was like not tucked all the way. The whole thing didn't quite work, but it kind of matched his personality because he was sort of a laid-back guy that didn't really care all that much about how he looked. So he didn't care, it didn't matter, and he was happy.
What about you, Stevie?
At the Revs, there was two guys at the Revs, right? Leo Cullen and Jay Heat.
Ooh.
So they were mates. They were always together. And all of a sudden, they started wearing everything inside out. So they walk in, the T-shirt's on, the T-shirt would be inside out. Or like even like a normal shirt, it would be inside out and the buttons would be done.
Right. Oh, what? It was fashion?
No idea. But the two of them started doing it. And they'd come into training and come into games. And all the tops were always inside out.
I had a teammate as well with, you remember him, Peter Vianis?
Yep.
With the Galaxy?
Right.
He would wear this velour suit. This tracksuits, velour suits.
Yeah, the velour is usually saved for the wags.
Well, no. I can tell you he was not a wag. And yeah, he would walk around with these things that looked very comfortable, but it wouldn't be the sort of thing that you'd be wearing around. But he was comfortable.
Stevie, I thought you might give us a Liverpool player.
I can't remember that far back. I mean, Barry Venison used to always come in with some strange stuff, but he kind of carried it off.
Right.
But listen, all the Scandinavian guys were always questionable.
So that hasn't changed then.
Well, they always, listen, it didn't matter what they had on, right? They always had white socks. So sometimes it looked a little strange.
But white socks is all the rage again now.
Is it?
I'll say it again.
It wasn't the rage back then.
But it is at the moment with the
But it was
youngsters.
For the Scandinavian boys.
Maybe he did have white socks on under that velour, under the desk. We'll have to find out.
Probably.
It's like, I tell you what Jan is wearing. It's sort of like one of those snuggy things that is like a blanket slash...
A slinky.
I don't know. I think it's a snuggy is what it's called. I'm sure it's very comfortable.
I know. Go on, Stevie.
No, so in the 80s particularly, you wore your own gear. Now, like today, you see all the teams turning up, and they've all got either the same tracksuit or they've got a club blazer, the whole thing. Back then, it was your own gear. And when you got dressed in the morning to go to the game with your own gear, you checked to make sure everyone was all right.
Right.
Because if somebody spotted something, either they didn't like it or whatever, you got absolutely annihilated. And we used to sit on the bus watching everybody coming on with what gear they had on, just to get somebody and then dive on them and slaughter them. I mean, you were actually thinking about it, getting on the bus. If you had a new suit on, you're like, oh, nobody takes the Mickey out of me.
Oh, wait. I remember one. Troy Dyer, San Jose Earthquakes. This guy showed up with a leather vest, like a cowboy leather vest, without a shirt on. And it was my first game with San Jose Earthquakes. I'd just been traded there.
Ooh.
And his cowboy hat, leather vest on, leather pants, cowboy boots, shirtless, and I just said, I can't believe this guy's my teammate. Troy Dyack.
That's what we call all the gear, no idea. I'm going to be so quick with this last one. I already know the answer to it, and I will put my house on it. Sid, during your time in Spain, who would you say has been the best player in La Liga, not named Lionel Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo?
Write it down.
Dani Alves.
Did I write it down or not?
You did, I.
I knew it would be Danny Alves. I know, my Sid. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us on the latest edition of Extra Time. Be sure to always catch it on YouTube.
Was that a magic trick?
It was a magic trick. ESPN FC is available daily on ESPN Plus.